Blog Talk Radio.
Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogunte Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening. Who are tuned in? We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe, O. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC and New Power Radio Network. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013, and we invite you to be a part of our conference calls as well as our Facebook groups and pages. You can find us at Sign of the Times, New Power Radio Network, myself as Queen Tahira, as well as several other civic-minded groups like the Black Four, Is Sermon Walks We All Walk, and the UAC Black Think Tank. We'd like to also invite you to reach out to us via email. Our email address is sign, the letter O, thetimes19@gmail.com. thetimes19@gmail.com. And 19 is 19, not the word 19 spelled out. There seems to be some difficulty understanding our email address, so I want to make sure that folks know exactly what it is, even though I say it every broadcast. Anyway, thetimes19@gmail.com. And please reach out to us. Let us know what you think about the broadcast. Let us know if there are some things that we could possibly assist you with and how we can build better unity no matter where we are throughout the diaspora. Also, please support our sponsors, Manhood Raising Culture, headed up by Dr. James Jones, who is our honorary co-host on Tuesday night with Dr. James Jones here on Sign of the Times. Please reach out to him as Manhood Race Culture on Facebook and manhoodraceculture.com on the World Wide Web. Also support Arlie Gordon from Unity Design. Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. Please reach out to him as Arlie Gordon on Facebook as well as on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And again, Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. So tonight we're going to have a listening session because we're really concentrating on gaining better understanding no matter where we are, like I said, throughout the diaspora, and whether we're confined citizens or whether we're alleged to have been free. It's important that we gain some understanding with one another so that we can rebuild the trust, rebuild the honor, rebuild the mutual respect, rebuild the love, and rebuild the dignity that we used to have in our community. And the way to start that is with good conversation. So I'm a believer that the Creator Most High invented our bodies, that we have two ears and one mouth for a reason. And so in staying close to what my convictions are, we're going to have some listening sessions for a minute so that we can gain some better understanding ourselves. And so part one is Diane Sawyer. The title of it is A Nation of Women Behind Bars. And it says more than 200,000 women across the United States are living behind bars. Most women are in prison for nonviolent crimes, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. According to the Justice Policy Institute and the Sentencing Project, the sentences for U.S. prisoners tend to be longer than in other industrialized nations. Below are the stories of some of the females inmates today and the stories of women they used to be. The photos that are accompanied with the Facebook YouTube link show that women, what they looked like before they were incarcerated, and women, what they look like now. So this is a documentary. It is on YouTube. Again, the title of it is Diane Sawyer, A Nation of Women Behind Bars. Part two is going to be America's Hardest Prisons, Women Behind Bars. It's another documentary that you can also find on YouTube and share with your family and friends and, you know, start the conversation. Because, you know, whether our family members are in front of our faces, you know, within a phone call's reach, or as confined citizens, they still need us. They still need our love, time, and attention. So it's up to us to be able to give that to them. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you to all the listeners online as well. If you'd like to call in, the number to dial is 917-889-8059, 917-889-8059. Please dial in if you'd like to make a comment following the dialogue. So this is part one, Diane Sawyer, A Nation of Women Behind Bars.
Tonight on 2020, a Diane Sawyer special, A Nation of Women Behind Bars. From the Little League mom to the lifer to the youngest woman on death row. Reporting now, Diane Sawyer.
Good evening. It's great to be back with you on this special 2020 Inside the Hidden World of America's Maximum Security Prisons. I've been covering the subject for decades, but tonight something is urgent and new. The United States is incarcerating more people than any other country in the world, people serving long sentences, and women are coming into prison at a faster rate than men. More and more people in the country on all political sides agree it's time to ask about the giant human and financial cost. We are not here to excuse anyone's crime, but come with us now and tell us what you think. Four female prisons, 8 months, a journey into a kind of foreign country right here at home. Tonight, across America, there is a nation of women living behind bars. 200,000, far more than any other country on the planet.
The whole world shattered.
We're all in here for stealing, killing, something.
When I first came here, I was suicidal.
You enter the closed universe through a labyrinth of doors, security, the body check to make sure you're bringing nothing in. After that, gates, barbed wire. This prison is in Maryland.
So this is basically the door to the rest of your life.
A life filled with prison codes and mystery. Where a woman who looks like your best friend or your absent-minded aunt, or someone on the dean's list can have caused pain or damage and have an awful secret. Here, you look at the inmate today and wonder about the woman she used to be. In that second before she knew she had become a prisoner.
Go ahead, take your clothes off one at a time.
Officers give the order to strip naked.
Let me see the bottom of your feet.
I was scared.
Clothes off, you're told to squat. Cough.
Sound fresh, mate. Open your mouth and double your tongue.
I was scared of that coming in here.
Cough.
When you cough, it releases the muscles. So if they are hiding anything inside of them, it will show. Cigarettes, drugs. You name it.
It's clear some prisoners don't want us around. So who are the women here in this vast continent of prison? 63% are in for nonviolent crimes like drugs and theft. Black women are still incarcerated at a higher rate than white women, 2-1. But the rate is closing because of the new population here. White women, many driven here by prescription drugs. They are young and old. And women like Nicole Kester, who says, don't be sure, her story couldn't happen to anyone.
Watching you on Good Morning America, I was thinking about that today. I was like, you every morning, that's who, you and Charlie, that's
Charlie
every morning,
yeah.
That's who I watch, getting ready for work and getting the kids' lunches back.
A loving husband, 3 kids, a good job, as the manager of a car company. She was a little league mom. One day, a painful car accident, an OxyContin prescription. And when those pills got too expensive, she turned to something cheaper, heroin.
And it just happened.
What do you mean just happened?
It was for pain, and then I realized it made everything so easy.
She stole checks to pay for drugs. Nicole Kester now has a sentence of 13 and a half years. Her husband comes to see her. She's only seen one of her children, her eldest son.
He's the only one that talks to me. But I mean, I ruined their lives. I'm no different than any other woman.
None of them.
You know, we're all in here.
Here, not only in large numbers, but with long sentences. In the last 7 years, a 14% increase in the women given life. They're called toe taggers. So we head out to find the woman named Arena Pretty, who's been in prison longer than any other woman in the state of Maryland, 36 years.
36 years growing up in here.
Do you still remember the day you walked in?
While I'm doing a life sentence. It finally hit me that I was here for the rest of my life.
When she came here, she was 18 years old. She says, from a home filled with abuse.
A little scared kid. All I wanted was attention. I wanted somebody to love me.
She says she met a boy, and with his friend, they set out to rob the store where she worked, and she admits she was there for the robbery.
This is Eyewitness News.
3 people accused of the murder of a Northwest Baltimore grocer this week.
Arena Pretty's boyfriend shot the store owner and the clerk. She says a few years back, she asked to be executed.
In 2003, I wrote Governor Earlet, and asked him for lethal injection.
You asked?
Yes, because of the victim's family and everybody. I wanted them to know that I was sorry for the crime that I had committed.
We reached out to the family of the store owner who died. They know we've talked to her. We've not heard back.
The pain is that when my boyfriend told me to tie them up and I saw it in their eyes, they didn't want. They say, please don't kill me, please don't kill me. And I told them to just listen to what he tells them to do, and nobody was going to die. So I had to live with that too.
Here in prison, Arena Pretty got a college degree. A previous warden and a supervising officer have argued for her release.
Are you still dangerous?
No, ma'am.
She wonders if America is ready to let her try again.
It'd be nice to be freed. But just give me another second chance, because I have done so much to better myself.
At the end of the day for this older prisoner,
let's go, baby!
We head over to another cell block. It's filled with the newcomers and more rebellious inmates, nicknamed the Hood. Inside, raucous energy, a kind of pandemonium. Some of the inmates are trying to watch movies on television, but they say you can't hear.
Yeah, you don't hear the movie, you just read the captions.
Others are playing games, others are lining up for the 30 minutes you get on the telephone. But when I ask the crowd who is the best singer here, and she walks up, the noise starts to subside. Her name is Alvera Brown, Pumpkin, serving 8 years for robbery. She sings a famous spiritual.
Should I feel this game?
On the wall, graffiti, messages from some of the thousands of women who were here before.
I was here, but now I'm gone. I left my name to carry on. Those who know me well. Those who don't can go to hell.
You are just me.
Next, revealing the secrets and codes behind bars. And duels between officers and women in prison.
Can you tell me what was going on here?
And later, from death row to dancing with the prisoners, when we return. We continue with Diane Sawyer.
It's like the TV show Orange is the New Black. By day, so many officers, so many women, an ocean of conspiracies, currency, and contraband.
Where the cigarettes at?
No. You ain't taking that fruit out of here.
By the way, the inmates can't see Orange is the New Black in prison because it costs money on Netflix.
What is red is black? Black is, what is it?
24 hours a day they're trying to figure out how to get it in. 8 hours a day we're trying to figure out how to stop it.
Drugs, contraband, in Maryland, random cell searches, try but can't catch everything.
Where are you looking? What are you?
Every inch and every crevice.
When you look at a room, you suddenly realize there's an infinity of places that you can store things. The smallest switch is an opportunity.
There's a screw at the top and they screw it out and they stick stuff up in there.
There can be drugs hidden in the soft tongue of a tennis shoe.
The toilet paper holder
and also the toilet itself.
Officers smell everything in the cell.
Making sure it is what it is. If it's soap, it's supposed to be soap.
Smells like butter, it's not supposed to be in here.
Other prisoners in the past have made what looks like candy.
What's that?
Homemade lollipop. At one point, they were melting the drugs down and making it a lot. Yeah.
As we filmed, no drugs found in this cell. Captain Kevin Branch is an investigator and says the hot drug in prison is called boxes. It's Suboxone, a chemical which mimics the effects of heroin. It can be found in strips as thin as cellophane. He shows us how one was sneaked in under a stamp on a letter.
Under the stamp?
Under the stamp.
That's
the box in there.
Officers search for it like needles in a stack of hundreds of letters and magazines.
But as you look at the paper, you see this clear square. Looks strange to us. We tore the whole thing apart, and inside is a Suboxone strip.
And one strip of Suboxone enough to keep you high for 8 hours. And the cost?
$80 to $100. We're on the street, they only cost $6.
And inmates in Tennessee will pay $200 for cigarettes, $1,200 for a cell phone.
You do know how they bring the phones in, right? God's pocketbook.
God's pocketbook is prison lingo for the word vagina. There's also a technique known as the dip.
Checking for any contraband. They like to hide stuff in their dip.
In the front of your pants, they call your dip.
The dip is anywhere right in this area. They hide contraband.
I'm searching. Turn around. They'll see me and they'll get the scattering.
Lieutenant Anderson in Maryland has her own constant patrol.
When I do the searches, I'm looking for notes, drugs in their breast area, inside their panties, in their hair.
Officers and women, sometimes opposing armies.
Come on, James, I gotta move. I gotta see what I got.
A prison employee needs help.
Can you tell me what was going on here?
No, I can't. I'm not at liberty to discuss that.
Who is the most dangerous for the security of everyone?
All inmates can be dangerous to some extent.
Why are your shirt not in? Step over here.
Captain Valerie Hampton has been an expert on the duel in prison, the manipulation, for 30 years, saying sometimes the officers become co-conspirators. Starting salary for an officer in Tennessee, $25,000. In Maryland, $38,000.
We have procedures that we set up to catch these bad people, and we deal with them.
These young inmates are using art class pencils for makeup. It's allowed, but they say a prisoner will pay a fortune to get real lip gloss from the outside. So how do they do it?
You just gotta know somebody that knows somebody. Tell officer, bring it in, we buy it, and we sell it.
Officially, the women accumulate 17 cents to $2.50 an hour from prison jobs, like yard work, sewing flags. They also have $50 to $75 credit at the commissary, a kind of small store of package goods, which they can use for bartering, since pretty much all prisoners told us they hate prison food.
I don't eat what I can't recognize.
Good morning.
So we go behind the walls into the kitchen.
You've got a lot of hair like me, so we better get you a red one, okay?
Jennifer tells us every item here can be traded for cash or a favor.
Everything's for sale.
Cheese, things that we don't get on commissary,
yeah.
Those are for sale.
Especially fresh fruit. Put sugar in it, keep it warm. You can make alcohol, prison hooch. Here they call it jump.
Make sure y'all don't have no apples and oranges on you today. Wouldn't want y'all making no julep.
They're tiny rooms. This inmate, 5'3" tall, shows us how tiny.
This is it.
The thing, the constant smells, strong smells, ammonia, people, life. Cooking.
In every cell, someone seems to have made a specialty from items in the commissary.
This is called foreplay. It's so good, like you just can't put it down.
Your kitchen, your bathroom, and your living room, and your bedroom's all in the same room.
Are there good manners that you use with the toilet?
I do, but not everybody does. I guess that's all in how you're raised.
Grown women, tiny space, so many years, and something else you see on Orange is the New Black.
That's how much I love my girl.
As the show points out, no code in prison is more mysterious or complex than the one governing sex and relationships. For some prison veterans, what's happening is simply shocking.
They said to me that it's the way it is out there now, Miss Pretty. And I'm like, and this is all right.
But not when you're gay. Gay for the state.
You may not be able to do all the things that a man can do for you, but you still get that companionship and you still get the physical needs.
There's people like that absolutely swear, oh, they never do it, and now they are. And then they end up arguing and fighting and acting crying, like, and they're so in love. Like, no, you're not.
In prison language, dom and femme, dominant and feminine. And everyone says inmates can find places to be alone.
It's called beating a compound. It just is. You make your way. Depending on how the officer, you know, perceives it.
Right. There's physical contact. Aren't there still penalties for that?
Mm-hmm, Miss Diane, you know I'm not going to say none of that.
Finding places in Tennessee.
In the closets, the laundry rooms, there's no cameras.
In the freezer, in the kitchen, and I've caught two in the chapel.
And in Maryland, too. But the warden tells us this is not just a game.
What are the rules about sex? We don't recognize consensual sex. There's no such thing.
And we're told this is where a woman's prison can be dangerous, too.
And that is what will get you more in trouble here more than anything else are the girlfriends. That's what most of the fights are.
The warden in Tennessee spots a binder clip in a prison cell used for constructing a sex toy.
Yeah, I found a binder clip that they can't have.
Can you show me? Let me see.
No, we're not going to do that. That's a security issue.
And when you leave, your secret goes with you.
It's almost like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens in the penitentiary stays in the penitentiary.
Before we move on, we have a note now about something we wanted to let you know. While we were in the Tennessee prison, a number of women came to us with allegations about an atmosphere of sexual pressure from some of the officers. We take them very seriously. We're going to investigate, and we've been promised by the prison system in Tennessee that they will look into whatever we find.
Next, from sorority girl to no chance at parole until age 85. What did she do when we returned? Once again, Diane Sawyer.
little girls who raise hard questions about crime, mental illness, and women in prison. Lindsay sang in the choir at church, a college graduate who worked at a dentist's office while living at home with her parents. She helped nurse her mother through a brain tumor. An ideal daughter in a very Christian family. On visiting day, her younger sister, Lacey. Then mom and dad come. Mom is a travel agent. He's the manager of an automotive dealership. And every Sunday, this has become their church.
Father in heaven, we're thankful for this day.
You know, as a parent, you can imagine a lot of things that might happen to your child that you don't want to happen.
Daddy loves you.
But you don't ever think about this.
This, the life that began one day at home when Lindsay's mother walked toward her laundry basket.
She did the unthinkable. Lindsay loved.
Local coverage descended on the story of the newborn twins found there, no longer alive. The parents didn't even know their daughter was pregnant. This is the police tape of Lindsay Lowe. She says to keep them quiet, she put her hands over the baby's mouths. Lindsay's parents and lawyers say it's clear she had a psychotic break. She wasn't hiding the crime, she left the babies at home.
It's dissociative symptoms, confusion, delirium, and stupor.
She was on suicide watch after her arrest. Then, after the verdict,
we, the jury, found the defendant guilty of first-degree felony murder.
She turns toward her stricken family and mouths, I'm okay. The 26-year-old woman will not even be able to see a parole officer until she is 85. Today at the Tennessee prison, she's on medication, joining the 63% of inmates here who line up for pills as many as three times a day.
That's 3 hours.
That's what happens when mental health breaks down.
It is one of the biggest differences between male and female prison. Nearly 60% of women come in after physical or sexual abuse. For men, it's just 16%. For Marilyn, for those who are mentally ill and in crisis, a suicide watch. These patients are placed in a kind of isolation, bare cells for their protection. No sheets, pillows allowed, only smocks.
If you have a long sleeve shirt, there's a possibility of strangling yourself.
But the question, should this be the role of America's prisons? Housing an estimated 10 times the number of mentally ill as America's hospitals. Here, there are some medical personnel, but inmates stand watch day and night. In the last 5 years, despite attempts.
How are you feeling today?
There have been no deaths by suicide.
Heavenly Father, we just want to pray, Lord. Amen.
And across the country, more bare cells for those with anger and impulse control problems who threaten violence against officers and other inmates. Here in Washington State, prisoners chained to chairs and desks.
Angry.
Attending a class on using words instead of fists.
Worried and anxious.
Here too, stone walls, stone bed, stone desk. A constant din of haunting howls on the corridor. In one cell, Anna Castellano, alcoholic mother, foster care, sexual abuse.
I get angry. I get angry fast.
Before prison, she attempted suicide. She wonders about other lives.
Like just normal people out there, you know? Like, what am I doing wrong? I think that they come home from a good job and see their wife or whatever and just have a home, a bed, place to sleep, happy, ice cream, pizza, you know?
In the 2 decades I've been covering prisons, there has been a growing controversy about the use of solitary, which prisons call segregation. There is also a change in access.
It was a long night. I won't say it wasn't. Someone's praying down the hall.
Today, more secrecy, concern about security.
You can't go inside.
But in the windows, I can see the faces of women trying to hold on to something on the outside. Two teachers come with lessons in grammar, math.
Okay, I'm back. All right, today's lesson has to do with a comma.
He even leaves a homework assignment.
And you can try and have that done tomorrow. Okay? All right, bye.
Can you read about rectangles right there?
Rectangles are everywhere.
You would think they would say, why bother? Why bother? I'm here.
And back in Maryland, we go to meet that other little girl in the photo you saw earlier. Her name, Celila Stokes. She spent 4 years on and off the unit called segregation.
I ended up busting her head open, coming out of my cuffs.
She's been diagnosed depressive bipolar, says she grew up in poverty and joined a gang because she wanted to have the fancy things other kids did. She was convicted of 3 attempted murders, and in a moment of rage, aimed a gun at a girl who survived.
How close were you?
A couple feet.
When you pulled the trigger, what were you thinking?
I wasn't thinking.
Did you think you'd killed her?
I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know, have you ever had an out-of-body experience where you see yourself, but you're not actually there? You don't hear anything, you don't smell anything. It's just like tunnel vision. That's how it was.
At the end of her sentence, Celila Stokes will be 69 years old. But there's something else you should know about the little girl in that picture. She was so bright, she was singled out for scholarship money and said to a reporter she was excited at a better chance of college.
What would you have been? What would you have studied?
Oh, man, anesthesiology.
Why that?
I just think I like meticulous things. So that would be something that would challenge my mind.
She's on medicine and therapy now, a room full of books.
And I'm going to prove myself, prove that I can be, that I've changed.
And when she offers up her dream of freedom, it was not what we expected.
The sweetest thing of freedom is to actually be able to be yourself. That's the sweetest thing of freedom. See, freedom is up here.
To be in control of yourself.
Exactly. An Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, he says, I am only but myself.
And when we reached out to the woman Celila Stokes attempted to kill with that gun, she told us she believes in forgiveness. And Warden Margaret Chippendale in Maryland says she thinks only a handful of prisoners are beyond change.
Good morning, all. Good morning, good morning. I believe that the vast majority of the women in this institution are good people that could be returned to the community someday. Good job. And if I don't believe that, I'm in the wrong profession.
If it's punishment.
Well, first of all, I'm going to take the position that it's not my job to punish. The courts did that.
And back in Tennessee, a volunteer choir director named Tina Hutchison says if you can't understand the prisoner, try to understand the struggle.
They teach me more than I could ever teach them about what it is to survive, to endure.
I want to know a song can rise from the ashes of a broken life, and all that's dead inside can be reborn. I want.
Next, who is the youngest woman on death row? When we return.
Tonight, 32 states in America have the death penalty. We're divided, so the state in which the crime is committed can determine your fate. There are about 3,000 men on death row and 55 women. We decided to look at this part of prison by tracking down the youngest women facing that sentence.
Ocala, Florida, at the Lowell Correctional Institution, 2 young women come down the hall, waving, smiling together like girlfriends.
Hi, how are you?
They are Tiffany Cole, now 33, Amelia Carr, now 30. 2 separate crimes, 2 separate lives until they became neighbors on the notorious corridor.
Do you call it death row?
No, we call it life row.
It's life row. Mm-hmm.
Life row?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because we're not dying, we're living.
Do you ever think I might be executed?
No. You can't have that mentality. Because that means you've accepted
You've already died. You've already died.
Yeah. You cannot have that mentality. Mm-hmm.
2 women, neither of whom had ever spent a night in jail before. Living lives so familiar. Tiffany played the flute in high school. Cheerleading. Girl Scouts. Amelia, book smart, and says she modeled and was in the school Marines. Both say they were sexually abused as children and both met the wrong guy. Tiffany says she barely knew her boyfriend.
3 weeks.
3 weeks. And had you ever been in trouble?
Mm-mm.
It is hard to connect the face in these photos to the horrible crime committed with her boyfriend and his friends, neighbors of her family first robbed, then buried alive in a grave.
I didn't know what was coming, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Her lawyer told the court Tiffany Cole thought the grave was for items they were stealing. He also talked about that sexual abuse by her father and her drugs, her mental and psychological problems. The jury saw a damning photo after the crime. They convicted her.
I am not the same person anymore. I have peace. I have joy. I have a sound mind.
And Amelia, the youngest woman on death row, convicted of another horrifying murder, helping her boyfriend suffocate his wife with duct tape and plastic bag. There is a police tape of Amelia after her boyfriend confessed. She's 8 months pregnant with his child.
Yeah, we're trying to count it. Oh, shoot.
She admits she was there, but says not when the wife was actually killed. Her lawyer argued there was no physical evidence that she had even touched the duct tape. But when the judge gave her her sentence, he called her cold and said, "May God have mercy on your soul."
The duct tape, the asphyxiation. What do you feel?
In what aspect? Like reflecting?
Yes.
They say they are reluctant to talk details of the crimes because they're both appealing their sentences.
It's hard to answer because it's like I wasn't where all that happened. But looking back and thinking about what she had to go through and, you know, what her family is enduring is terrible.
And they asked some questions of us about the justice system. A study estimates 1 in 25 people on death row is innocent of the crime. And 75% have no money for private lawyers. Amelia says she had no money, but her boyfriend hired a high-powered attorney. He got life, she got death.
How many rich people are in prison? Seriously, seriously.
On death row, life sentences.
We're all people who are either minorities or didn't have any money. Unfortunately, equality is an illusion.
And before we leave, she has another question, this one about TV.
I have a question. Why do you think there's such a desire to make women look so bad in the media? You know?
They watch endless crime stories about women who kill.
Like Jodi Arias, you know, that thing went huge. I don't understand. Why does America want so bad to feed off of this negativity?
The young women get up to go back to their cells 24 hours a day, except for the three times a week they're outside on concrete for 2 hours. In a different building, the chamber where Florida executes death row inmates. Across America, there have been 5 executions of women in the last decade, another one scheduled for Monday. And when we contacted the victims' families in both these crimes, they told us they believe the death penalty is right. The women said they will go back to their books and their prayers.
And praising God in the process, you know, and just showing people we're people.
It's not over. There is forgiveness and there is hope.
Next, one prison where they believe the inmates should keep their humanity. Watch what happens when they break free. When we return. Once again, Diane Sawyer.
A 53-year-old woman, Betty Brown, is leaving prison after 29 years. The wardens say women age faster in prison.
Am I scared? Am I afraid? Absolutely. Because I've been locked up for such a long time. But I'm going to be all right.
America has an unprecedented number of older women serving long sentences in prison. Betty's blood pressure is high. She's on seizure medications. In for second-degree murder, she was a mentor over the years for Salila Stokes.
Oh, be always crying. It's going to be all right.
Let me tell you something. The same way that I made it, you're going to make it.
This one prisoner has cost taxpayers more than $1 million during her incarceration. And after all these years, Betty is taking with her $50, five boxes of books, and a thank you for the warden.
Ms. Chippendale.
Ms. Akuma Kamisei, it was nice knowing you.
Thank you very much.
Just a few more steps. I gotta make it. I made it this far. Oh, real air. Real air.
Warden Chippendale has nearly 90 programs in Maryland.
Makes a difference when they leave?
I think it makes a huge difference.
Experts say education reduces recidivism by 43%. Goucher College offers classes in Maryland, but there's a waiting list. In addition to the programs, Warden Chippendale says something else is important, keeping a woman connected to humanity.
Number one, right here.
Their big night, the prison version of Dancing with the Stars. It's just like in the TV show.
You know, the wave.
Prisoners with good behavior can apply to compete.
I practice, like, every day, even in my cell.
This inmate is really nervous.
She was an older lady than me. So I was like, oh, no, I cannot drop this lady.
So the officers bring the clothes and look at the transformation before, after, before, after. Inmates facing decades in prison as rock stars.
I look at technique, I look at synchronization and choreography.
They dance, and the judges, who include the assistant warden and officers, vote. The prize, some small things we might take for granted.
Toothbrush, soap.
The winner is the oldest contestant. She's 48.
It makes me so happy, instead of being negative all the time.
And so what is the recidivism rate in Maryland? 40.5% in 2012. The latest national rate is 68%.
And I think it is because we've invested time, we've invested money and talent into providing resources for offenders.
Hold up right there.
But as we said, every state has a different philosophy. Tennessee believes prisoners should be rigidly controlled in how they walk and dress.
So the female offenders walk in a straight line. They have their hands out of their pockets, and that's for a safety reason.
They also have programs in Tennessee, about 27 of them. And their recidivism rate here? The latest published data is from 2007. It's 46%. And while I'm there at Tennessee, I start talking to a prisoner who's about to be released.
And then, I have to represent, she has to be behind the barrier when she talks to you at the door. She'll have to be sitting with her feet. That's our policy.
Do you have a favorite book here?
I think Augustine Burroughs, I like Possible Side Effects. He wrote Running with Scissors.
Yes.
I love him.
Good morning.
Later at breakfast, Jessie Thomas tells me about her medications, Pamelor, Prozac, Tegretol, for mental health problems.
One for depression, one for bipolar, and one for anxiety and ADHD.
She's in prison for theft and says she started using drugs as a teenager. Jessie also tells me she found a soulmate in prison, but her soulmate is in for 25 years.
I love you. It's just a really healthy relationship.
To live is to suffer. To survive is to find meaning in the suffering.
So on the day she walks out, she has $68, three T-shirts, a few notes from her girlfriend. And even though she's supposed to be given 14 days of medication, she says she has nothing. A younger sister picks her up. Their first stop, Taco Bell.
Can I have a cheesy gordita crunch?
But the sister can only keep her one night. Jessie says she wrote halfway houses, shelters, job centers, but two rejected her and the others didn't answer. In the car, a favorite song.
Feel like you still have a choice. If we all light up, we can scare away the dark.
Starting fresh, starting over. I see it really overwhelming.
On her first night free, she records a video diary.
A lot of options, and I'm scared to make the bad ones. I'm scared to make the wrong ones, so I don't want to make any. I don't know what to do to distract myself. The only thing I've ever really done is really just get high. Maybe I'll get some sleep. Maybe I'll just lay here and think about sleeping.
Experts say the first month out of prison is the most important. Jessie says it was 9 days after she walked out she finally got her medication, and she's already missed 20 doses. She got a job washing dishes, but 34 days after her release, police charged Jessie with robbing two pharmacies to get money for street drugs. Tonight, Jessie is back in jail.
We have been looking into what other Western countries are doing, and we discovered they tend to use more fines, treatment, and support programs for nonviolent offenders instead of incarceration. And they say it's more effective. While here at home, advocates of prison reform say that approach would cost a fraction of what we spend every year on prisons and would be better at preventing crime.
Next, visiting hours. The families who didn't ask for this, serving a sentence too. When we return, we continue with a nation of women behind bars. Once again, Diane Sawyer.
You'll remember Nicole Kester, who started out on prescription drugs. Her husband Tracy makes the 2.5-hour drive every week to spend 60 minutes with her.
She's my girl. She's always going to be my girl.
Better or worse, remember?
Yeah.
A 13-and-a-half-year sentence, she's eligible for a parole hearing in May.
Are they here?
On another day, Irena Pretty, who served 36 years, waiting to see her 9-year-old grandson.
Hey, boy. Look at you. You're looking like mama.
I'm going to take you places, and it's going to be me and you. We're going all over the place. I'm just going to smuggle you.
Why can't we call you?
Because it's a special phone, and it don't take in calls. You understand it? If I had a cell phone, I'd be like...
Irena is eligible for a parole hearing in June, but it will be her fifth try. And someone else is waiting. Remember Salila Stokes? Her mom comes with her 93-year-old grandmother, who has had two strokes.
She loves me. I know that. Yeah. And I love her, too.
I'll bet she is.
What's up, Mama?
You make sure go... You my baby.
Self-quiet. Hold your tears.
Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
We do a little game or competition of how much I love you more. You know, just trying to make me feel it, just to know that someone loves me.
I love you more than all of the leaves on the pages in every book that has been printed.
I love you more than all the holes in every vent in every prison in the entire universe. Boom.
What holes?
Ah, we got holes in the vent.
I still think my books beat that, though. I really do.
Karen's
time
for visit is now over.
Oh, I gotta go.
You gotta go.
It's time for us to go.
Oh,
I want to stand and
show
her.
Salila Stokes knows with her full sentence, it will be 43 years before she leaves.
Love you.
She'll be 69.
Everybody I love will be gone. That's it. Bullets pierce. Handcuffs are tight. Cells are lonely.
And tonight, at this moment across America, hundreds of thousands of women getting ready for the sound of the door locking again.
You're just asking for a little understanding.
For us, towards you, and from you, towards us.
It's not radio once again. There will be no more inmate movement for tonight.
And so now we return to what you think about the questions we asked when we began. Is it time to look at America's prison system? What is sustainable? What works? And one thing is clear to me after 20 years of reporting, these questions are only getting bigger. So join us on Twitter, Facebook, and the 2020 page for this conversation. We want to thank the wardens who led us in their institutions, and we want to thank all of you who joined us here tonight. Good night.
America is ready to let her try again.
It'd be nice to be freed, but just give me a number, a second chance, because I have done so much to better myself.
At the end of the day for this older prisoner,
let's go, baby!
We head over to another cell block. It's filled with the newcomers and more rebellious inmates, nicknamed the Hood. Inside, raucous energy, a kind of pandemonium. Some of the inmates are trying to watch movies on television, but they say you can't hear.
Yeah, you don't hear the movie, you just read the caption.
Others are playing games, others are lining up for the 30 minutes you get on the telephone. But when I ask the crowd, who is the best singer here? And she walks up, the noise starts to subside. Her name is Alvera Brown, Pumpkin, serving 8 years for robbery. She sings a famous spiritual.
Should I be you? This game.
On the wall, graffiti, messages from some of the thousands of women who were here before.
I was here, but now I'm gone. I left my name to carry on. Those who know me well. Those who don't can go to...
She's my girl. She's always going to be my girl.
Better or worse, remember?
Yeah.
A 13-and-a-half-year sentence, she's eligible for a parole hearing in May.
Are they here?
On another day, Irena Pretty, who served 36 years, waiting to see her 9-year-old grandson.
Hey, boy. Look at you. You're looking like mama.
I'm going to take you places, and it's going to be me and you. We're going all over the place. I'm just going to smuggle you.
Why can't we call you?
Because it's a special phone, and it don't take in calls. You understand it?
If I had a cell phone, I'd be like...
Irena is eligible for a parole hearing in June, but it will be her fifth try. And someone else is waiting. Remember Salila Stokes? Her mom comes with her 93-year-old grandmother, who has had two strokes.
She loves me. I know that.
Yeah.
And I love her, too.
I'll bet she is.
What's up, Mama?
You make sure go... Well, yes, you my baby.
Self-cry, holy tears.
Feeling okay?
Yes, ma'am. We do a little game or competition of how much I love you more.
You know, there are about 3,000 men on death row and 55 women. We decided to look at this part of prison by tracking down the youngest women facing that sentence. Ocala, Florida, at the Lowell Correctional Institution, two young women come down the hall, waving, smiling together like girlfriends.
Hi, how are you?
They are Tiffany Cole, now 33, Amelia Carr, now 30. Two separate crimes, two separate lives until they became neighbors on the notorious...
Women in Maryland. They are murderers, dealers, and thieves.
I've been shot at. You go through that through the game. That's called a game.
From career criminals to first timers, all housed in one prison.
I just didn't know what I was coming into. You're mixed in with all different people.
For many, rage and violence are a way of life.
You want to look out for yourself, because nobody else is going to.
We got into this argument and she choked me.
Welcome to the world of Maryland's female convicts.
Get out of my face!
Jessup, Maryland, outside of Baltimore. Home to the only prison for the state's female felons. Killers, kidnappers, addicts. They all land here at Maryland Correctional Institution for Women, or MCIW.
Mama lover. Mama lover.
They never stop coming. Each year, about 1,300 inmates pass through the prison's intake center, where they are strip searched, interviewed, and assigned a place in the system. Many come fresh off the brutal streets of Baltimore, a city just 15 miles north of the prison, and one of the most violent in the nation.
I've been shot at, you know. It's just crazy. You go through that through the game. That's called a game.
I put a gun into my face. I never liked her. Thank you, Jesus, that the gun ain't go off, or I would have been over here for life.
At MCIW, these new arrivals will live alongside every type of felon. 900 offenders are housed here, minimum to maximum security. The highly aggressive with the low risk, all mixed together. Some inmates have more trouble than others adjusting, like Paris Pratt.
It's tight. I have had roommates where I had to get them out because I don't have a lot of patience these days with the foolishness and all of the craziness that people bring to your room. I don't decorate. I haven't decorated this cell because I don't want to feel like this is my home.
Paris arrived a year ago and is still struggling to settle in.
Some days I wake up good. Other days I wake up bad. Other days I wake up feeling very homicidal.
Though only 25 years old, she will be here for the rest of her life. Abandoned as a teenager, Paris started dealing crack to support herself on the streets. Now, she's been convicted of killing a 16-year-old boy in cold blood.
I was convicted of first-degree murder, and I was sentenced to a life sentence plus 25 years with no parole. I've been painted this picture as a monster.
Paris was the first woman sentenced to life without parole in Montgomery County, a middle-class suburban area outside of Washington, D.C.
I shot, fired two shots. Fell backwards, fell on his back, was laying on the ground, trying to get up, but it's like he couldn't.
Police say she thought the boy was a snitch. She claims that it was self-defense.
Things got ugly, and when his hand came out of his pocket a little bit, I saw the knife in his hand. So my first instinct, just like anybody else, was to defend myself.
Paris is trying hard to keep herself in check behind bars. If she breaks the rules, she'll wind up in segregation or lock.
If somebody touches me, I'm definitely going on lock because I'm definitely going to defend myself.
Lock is the unit reserved for the highly violent and explosive. Offenders are confined to their cells 23 hours a day. It's the last place inmates want to be.
I haven't been on lock. Thank God. But because I have an attitude. I do have an attitude.
You're going to look out for yourself because you have to, because nobody else is going to. If I stay here and I let somebody stab me in here, I'm stabbed. They're not going to give a damn about what caused it, who did what or whatever. The first thing I'm going to do is say, oh, okay, you did it, lock her up.
It's up to officers like Captain Hannah to keep Paris and other inmates under control. In her 20-year career, this wife and mother of three has come across every type of criminal, male and female. She knows that these women are dangerously on the edge.
You're working with people who have committed crimes, have the potential to commit more crimes, so that's the danger element. You're working with people who are unstable, have a lot of mental health issues, emotional issues, and some people are just not going to like you just because.
This afternoon, Captain Hannah is making rounds on the prison campus, making sure inmates are inside, getting ready for daily count. She's aware of how unpredictable and unstable these women can be,
and is careful as she approaches an agitated offender in a nearby building.
Somebody wants to help me. I want help. I want somebody to help me. That's what I want. I want to stop banging on the doors and the windows, begging for help, and nobody is helping me. I need help. What's the problem? I don't understand.
The inmate might try to reach through the bars in the window and hurt someone. So Captain Hannah must calm her down.
Quiet and try to appease me.
It's easier to talk them down as long as you keep calm. Eventually, they'll come down. But if you start screaming, hollering, getting excited with them, it's going to blow up proportion, and you won't be able to get control of the situation.
There's always a possibility that I could be attacked. Some have tried in the past, so the threat is always there. I don't forget where I am. I remember where I am. I am in prison.
Inside, inmates are locking down. They're free to be out of their cells for most of the day, but must be back for 2:30 afternoon count.
Don't get yourself alone. I'm not being the
disrespectful.
Actually,
you didn't have to
say get out of the thing. You didn't have to say that.
I don't want to be.
You didn't have to say that though.
All right. On a housing unit floor, one officer watches up to 112 inmates, with only a radio for backup. They are unarmed so that weapons do not fall into the wrong hands. But that means control is crucial here. Building 192 is one of the prison's four main housing units. It's broken into four wings. One of them, D Wing, houses inmates who have serious anger and behavioral issues.
It's a bunch of chaos. People banging on the door. She wants to kick and bang, scream, cuss out the police, or cuss out the inmates walking past the door. Whatever, just stuff like that.
Inmate Christy Seal has trouble getting along with others, so she lives alone in her 8x5 cell.
I got anger issues real bad, and me dealing with my anger issues, I couldn't be somebody's roommate.
Christy is serving a 5-year sentence for attempting to sell crack. This marks Christie's third trip to the prison. An addiction to crack cocaine keeps bringing her back.
I can't stop getting high. It's just, I guess it's a mind over matter thing.
But Christie is determined to make this her last trip to MCIW. She hopes to earn her high school diploma while behind bars. She's also working hard to get out early. For the first time, a family is waiting for her on the outside.
All my life, I've never had my mother. Now I'm 33 years old, and now my mother's decided at 51 years old she wants to decide to be a mother to me. She's decided she don't want the drugs. She wants a life of being around me and my sister.
Christy hopes if she behaves herself, she can make parole and leave prison in 2 years instead of 5. To do that, she can't go off on inmates in the prison's general population.
If I can't deal with people in population, how am I going to deal with people in society?
To help keep calm, she turns to her inmate girlfriend. But that means breaking the rules.
She's like my soulmate. I mean, we're so much alike, but we're so different, too. And it's like, we just belong together.
The prison doesn't allow for relationships, since they often lead to conflict. And the last thing Christy needs is any more trouble. Across the prison campus, inmate Jill Newland is a first-timer to the prison. Hers is not a typical criminal background, and this place makes her anxious.
I just didn't know what I was coming into. It was the unknown. It was really scary. You are mixed in with lifers. You're mixed in with all different people.
The 34-year-old grew up in a middle-class suburb of Baltimore, attended college, and led a comfortable life until she got hooked on painkillers.
It just escalated. I ran out of prescription medication, so I went to other things. I started experimenting with heroin, cocaine, things like that.
Jill soon found herself disappearing for days into Baltimore drug houses.
People were dealing drugs out of the house. Constantly people in and out, probably up to 60 to 70 people in the house at a time. It's just crazy where drugs lead you.
she eventually turned to crime to support her habit. Convicted of first-degree burglary, Jill got an 8-year sentence but was put on probation. She violated her probation and is now doing hard time. Prison is tough enough for first-timers, but for Jill, it's proving even harder. She was 3 months pregnant when coming to prison, but then found out she is having twins when she arrived.
I didn't know I was having twins, so I got down here. So it was a joyful occasion, then it was sad. The girl, we're going to name Savannah Hope, and the boy is going to be Jacob.
Jill already has a 3-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old son, both of whom live with her husband.
My two at home, I don't really talk about that much. It's like a sore subject because I sit there and it's hard to deal with. You know, one day I was there, next day I'm gone. I really wasn't being a good mom because a good mom doesn't get high.
In this prison, pregnant inmates are treated like everyone else.
I thought like they'd have a whole little pregnancy area and like, you know, just I thought it'd be different. Not really mixed in with general population. I was nervous about that at first because I was thinking if there was a fight, you know, it's very easy for me to, you know, get bumped into. Anything could happen, and yeah, that scared me. I mean, you have to watch yourself.
Because she is carrying twins, Jill's pregnancy is considered high risk. Twins are often premature, and her past drug use could compromise the baby's health. As her due date nears, the prison has confined Jill to the infirmary, a small wing separate from the main housing unit. Security cameras monitor these women 24/7 in case something goes wrong.
I'm really concerned about their health. I mean, I think their health is good, but it's still scary because you don't know. I mean, I won't know until the babies are born. As it's getting closer, it's getting worse. But can't do anything about it, so I've just tried to deal with it. I have to take it one day at a time and just hope for the best.
But Jill will have to deal with far more than she expects in the days to come. MCIW, the only women's state prison in Maryland. Some inmates stay only a few months, others remain for life. The number of women behind bars is climbing at a rate nearly twice as fast as that for men.
There are more women now that are committing crimes that which leads to incarceration. Anywhere from prostitution to drug charges, murder charges, theft. Abuse. I've been through it all myself, but you can change. It could have been me sitting here. I've been through abusive relationships. I have thought about doing some things to my ex-husband that probably would have wound me in here.
Change is crucial if these women are ever going to make it in the free world.
People down us because we're prostitutes and drug addicts. A lot of society does. They think we can't change.
I don't want to go back out there and use, but I know once I hit the streets, I know what I'm capable of doing. I need that treatment in my life. I need that help. I need that extra push.
MCIW tries to prepare them for life beyond the walls with intense drug rehab, high school and college courses, and critical job training.
I believe that everybody should be punished for the crime they committed, but we try our best to prepare them to re-enter society and not make the same mistakes that they have made to get here in the first place.
And the programs seem to be working. The inmates who participate cut their chances of reoffending by almost half.
prison sew shop offer some of the best training. The women learn marketable skills, and daily pay here goes up to $3.50. Behind bars, that's a big paycheck, and it's considered a privilege to work here. Lifer and convicted murderer Paris Pratt is one of 85 women who have landed a job here, making uniforms and flags for the state. The work keeps Paris busy and keeps her mind off being locked up. But the distraction only goes so far.
It's like I'm really going through something within myself.
Wake up, you're on the same people, doing the same dumb stuff. You work, you slave for a little bit of money, eat the same stuff, that's disgusting. Like, really, you had nothing to look forward to.
Etta Myers also helps Paris get through the days. The two women work together in the sew shop. Etta is a fellow lifer and one of the few inmates she trusts.
I used to think she got to be crazy to be still sane after 32 years, you know.
Sorry.
But I guess as time goes along and I learn how to cope with things and deal with things differently, maybe I might can be like her one day.
Etta was convicted of killing a man during an attempted robbery in his home.
I got locked up in 1977 for murder in the first degree with a handgun. Before I came to jail, I was married. I was a drug addict.
Like Paris, she came to the prison in her early 20s, and at first, didn't think she would make it.
There was nobody that I could trust in jail, so it was easier for me to stay by myself than to mingle with somebody who I didn't know anything about. I was very uneducated, very fragile. Very empty inside, very frightened, very, very afraid.
Oh, okay, I wake up because...
I met Paris about a year ago. She had just come into prison with a life sentence. They wanted her to know that there were people here who actually had been here for a long period of time and had fared just well. Her first question was, how long have you been here? And oh my God, you look so good. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what good is, but thanks.
Etta knows that Paris is on edge.
I don't think that it is hit her. Reality has really not set in. For most of us who serve a long sentence, it takes a couple years before it actually settles in. Before you're able to accept it. For the people that don't accept it, it's going to be really hard because life is hard in jail. They can get caught up in the madness and the negativity, and that'll only allow them to go to mental health when on lock.
Etta hopes Paris can handle life behind bars without succumbing to madness or violence. She watches Paris closely, especially in the prison sew shop, where the edgy young inmate handles sharp tools. She doesn't want to see Paris or anyone else get hurt. All items must be carefully tracked.
We do an inventory of all the tools, so when something turns up missing, all doors are locked, we'll put on lockdown until that particular tool is found.
And at the start and close of each shift, officers give everyone a thorough pat-down.
So anytime you come in and out, you're definitely safe.
Scissors, screwdrivers, even needles. In the hands of an angry inmate, they could easily become lethal weapons. It's almost 11:30, lunchtime. and a large crowd is gathering in the chow hall. With so many inmates in one place, a lot can go wrong in just seconds. Inmate Christy Seal has been working hard to stay out of trouble and to make parole. But today in the chow hall, an ordinary lunch with her girlfriend goes wrong.
Mind your business, stay out my business. It's not that hard. You know what I'm saying?
An argument breaks out between the two of them. And suddenly, the girlfriend grabs Christy by the throat.
Mind your business.
Officers quickly stop the fight, and both women are taken into segregation immediately.
I'm just trying to tell you, you shouldn't have to lock me up. I didn't do nothing. I didn't put my hands on nobody. So why they got handcuffed me? Nobody's trying to explain nothing to me.
Now, Christy is in seg, despite her efforts to keep her record clean. And she fears that her chances of making parole and reuniting with her family are slipping away fast. Thursday morning at Maryland Correctional Institution for Women. Here, behind the mesh of razor wire, 900 of the state's worst female offenders are forced to live together. At any given time, about 20 of these inmates are pregnant. Among them is convicted burglar and drug addict Jill Newland, who is expecting twins. 3 weeks remain until her delivery date. Every week, Jill undergoes a routine checkup. Her weight, blood pressure, and the baby's heartbeat, along with the size of the uterus. But today's exam brings some scary news. As is often the case with twins, the babies are ready to come out weeks ahead of schedule. Jill must head to the local hospital immediately.
The anxiety started building up with the fact of knowing that it was coming to an end, and reality set in a little, and it's just a scary situation.
But even now, security cannot be compromised. Two officers are required to transport her, and she must wait for clearance at all checkpoints. Pregnant or not, she's still treated as a dangerous felon.
I'm embarrassed and I'm upset that I put myself in the situation to have to hear they're pregnant and handcuffed. It just seems like it's surreal. It's like everything's just happening, and I feel sometimes like, what's going on? Is this real?
The hospital is only 15 miles away, but it's a long drive for Jill. She doesn't know what this early delivery might mean for the unborn twins. Inside the prison gates, the grounds are unusually quiet. A prisoner is coming out of segregation, and Captain Hannah has cleared the entire area. All outdoor movement stops whenever an offender leaves her segregation cell. An officer escort always stays close by her side. It's all about keeping the inmates safe from attack.
There's not supposed to be any inmates on the ground when the seg is moving. It's our responsibility to protect that inmate because they are handcuffed. So if something happens, they cannot defend themselves. If they're fighting somebody and that person has friends out in general population, then they could be a possible enemy.
The extra security also protects the staff from getting hurt. Officers know they can never let their guard down when dealing with convicted criminals. Captain Hannah learned this the hard way. As a young officer, she survived a vicious inmate attack. It took months for her to recover.
I had been on the job approximately 4 months, and I was attacked by an inmate, maximum security prison. Segregation inmate ran down the tee, jumped me from behind, and he stabbed me. The shoulder, the back, the side of the face. I was stabbed 5 times. At first, I didn't even know that I was being stabbed because it just felt like punches. I came back to work because I knew the risk involved when I took the job. You could lose your life in prison.
Lieutenant Parker, all OICs, 1021 shift.
Captain Hannah to all units, resume your movement, resume your movement.
The attack is a constant reminder of how dangerous her job can be, especially when handling the volatile inmates housed in segregation. Also known as LOC, the 48 cells in SEG are reserved for the prisoners who break the rules. In LOC, inmates are confined to their cells nearly every hour of every day, with only 2 showers a week. Inmates say it's dark and loud and frightening. For the prison, it's the ultimate discipline. For inmates, there's nothing worse. It can stay with them long after they get out.
I used to be terrible at that point. I made a change in my life not to go back over there because it's not worth going over there.
And now that's really how you lose your mind. You get absolutely nothing. So you're sitting in this little cell, and I mean, people scream out the windows all night and sing. I mean, they do anything that they possibly can to keep their mind off of what they're going through.
Man, lock is horrible. You never come out to cell. You got all this time to sit in there and just look at walls and think and talk to yourself. I mean, who wants to be over there and be miserable like that? I know I don't. I'm in school. I'm trying to do what I need to do to get out of here. I'm not trying to make my time stop by going in the lock. You know what I'm saying? And I'm telling you, you don't want to go over there.
Christy Seal has just come out of lock after fighting in the cafeteria with her inmate girlfriend.
My girlfriend is a liar. I'm finding out a lot of things that she's doing, being sneaky, being phony with stuff. I found out she was telling somebody that I need her. I don't need you, miss. Are you crazy? And we got into it in the cafeteria. We got into a heated argument, and she choked me.
This was Christy's first trip back to SEG in months. Luckily, she was cleared of all charges this time. The prison ruled the instigator was Christy's girlfriend, who remains in lock.
She's always putting her hands on me. There's a scratch mark on my neck where it's healing up right there. She did that. You know what I'm saying? So I'm constantly smacking her back because I'm not going to just keep allowing you to put your hands on me and think I'm not going to smack you back.
Hearing about the fight with her girlfriend, Captain Hannah brings Christy in for a talk after she is released from SEG.
So what are you planning to do now?
I'm going to try to stay away from her. And I did say try.
We do not condone these relationships, but we know they do happen. And it doesn't work out. There are fights. The women may do certain things or act certain ways towards other inmates just to make this particular one jealous. And it creates a lot of problems.
My anger took over because I couldn't. It felt like I couldn't breathe. I felt like everybody was ganging up on me.
Mm-hmm. You have to be able to handle your anger issues. What do you have planned for when you leave here? If you don't have a plan, you're going to be back here. What about your education, college degree? Do you have your high school diploma?
I can't get it.
Why?
Because I ain't smart enough yet.
Yes, you are. Don't say that. I mean, I waited till I was an old lady before I got my bachelor's degree, but I did it. Issues come about.
Hannah reminds Christy that she needs to stay focused on getting out and staying out of prison.
That I want you to focus on. You're going to be okay. I just want you to focus on you.
Yeah.
You getting better. You healing emotionally. Because when you leave, and you will be leaving, I want you to stay gone.
I do too.
Yeah, because I'm tired of seeing you in here.
I'm tired of seeing myself in here. I'm tired of seeing myself in here.
Christy is going to work hard to avoid any more trouble. But while Christy is now out of SEG, 25-year-old murderer Paris Pratt has landed there for the very first time. She's been accused of spitting on another inmate, which is a serious offense here. Major Carrington is a 21-year veteran of MCIW. She leads the team that is investigating the case.
Spitting on somebody is considered assault because that's another person's body fluid being put on somebody. Spitting, throwing urine, throwing feces, that's considered assault.
It started innocently, with Paris and a friend horsing around. But then, it got out of hand. Because the case involves assault, both inmates will stay on lock until officers sort out the truth. Paris says she was unjustly accused.
Nobody even cares enough to actually look into something and find the truth in it. And I think it's unfortunate that I have to sit in here and do all of this time and go through all of this and be miserable in here.
Paris has never been in segregation before, and it sometimes makes inmates more unstable and more violent.
Something's gonna have to give because I just can't live like this. I have so many bad days in here because I have never seen nothing like this before. This is really hard for me to really cope in this place.
If found guilty, Paris could be in lock for weeks. And for a lifer already on edge, it could prove too much to handle.
That way anybody can go get it. There's no claim to any specific person, so if you find it in the common area, you cannot say this belongs to this particular inmate.
You can do it. They're very creative in how they hide things. They would hide stuff inside the trash can because they know nobody really wants to put their hands on that because that's unsanitary.
They can hide stuff behind the paper, so you have to look under that to make sure that there are no razors, tobacco or anything hidden behind that. You have marijuana, heroin, pills. And a lot of times women will take other people's drugs, psychotropic drugs just to get high. If they know that you're constantly searching and that you're being consistent with it, then they're less likely to hide it in these areas.
Those caught with dangerous contraband end up in segregation or lock with other rule breakers. Like inmate Paris Pratt, who is just getting out from a one-week stay on an alleged assault charge. But she's not out of trouble yet. The prison concluded that Paris did not spit on anyone and has dropped the assault charge. But she still faces a hearing on a related violation from that night, aggressive horseplay. If found guilty, the inmate is in danger of seeing more seg time. The charge sounds relatively harmless, but the prison knows how easily things can escalate here. Hearing Officer Barthlow oversees these disciplinary cases.
Starts out as some minor type of play, but then someone takes offense to what's occurring in the way of too hard of a bump or some comment being made, and then the fists start flying.
Sometimes, prisons allow another inmate to act as a sort of representative for the accused. She argues on Paris's behalf and ensures that she is treated fairly. During these sessions, the inmates must be heavily restrained.
We've had incidences in the past where inmates have not been shackled, where either the hearing officer or the officer assigned to the hearing was injured, with someone becoming upset and becoming physical as a result of the decisions that are made.
Hearing Officer Barthlow reads the report from that night.
At approximately 6:40 p.m., while observing inmates returning from dinner, I observed inmate Paris Pratt, 923-505, and Crystal pulling each other's shirt and chasing each other recklessly. I ordered them to stop horseplaying and ordered them to go into the building.
This is not a violent act. It's not a...
The inmate representative defends Paris, claiming she played no real part in the incident.
So in this case, Ms. Pratt actually did not do anything. They were coming from dinner. She was on her way into the building. She did not reckless in any manner.
But this isn't the first time Paris has been in trouble. She's had three similar violations in the past, and given her record, hearing officer Barthlow is not convinced.
Ms. Pratt, after weighing what your representative has presented here through her arguments, what the institution has presented through its evidence, I will find you guilty of a violation of 501. You're obviously having some problems with the rules and your adjustment here. If you don't work with the system, then the system, there are consequences to pay. And if you are found guilty of another violation within the next 3 months, it's mandatory that the hearing officer must impose segregation. That's disciplinary segregation. All right?
Paris is lucky, but now walks a very thin line. If she breaks a rule again, Paris returns to lock immediately.
Should I be happy? I don't have nothing to say right now.
The thought of more seg time unnerves her.
I can't live in it. So I can't function positively. It's just, it's like a big cage. And it's traumatizing. I went crazy over there. I mean, I didn't know what to do. You're in a cell, all these cages, like you're an animal, yelling, screaming. It was just crazy.
Back in the sew shop, Paris tries to return to her routine and focus on work. But she can't shake off her anger over the day's events.
I'm frustrated. This whole situation, I'm just sick of this institution. Like, I'm sick of this place. I'm sick of it because they all full of shit. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but I don't even care no more. I don't.
Paris knows her outburst could lead to more trouble, but controlling her frustration may prove even harder now. Outside of the prison, at the local hospital, Jill Newland has just given birth to two babies, Savannah Hope and Jacob Michael.
The girl is, 6 pounds, 3.8 ounces, and the boy was 5 pounds, 4.3 ounces. So.
Both are healthy.
I was concerned when I first got here on how everything was going to go, just being the high risk. But everything went okay. And I was very thankful.
But even now, in the hospital, Jill is reminded that she is a convicted felon as well as a new mom. Officers, rather than family members, stand by her bedside for the big occasion.
The officers stay in the room with me. They don't stay outside the room. You can't just call your family and just expect everybody to come see you because it's a breach of security. I get really mad at myself. I'm like, look what I did now. Like, Jill, like, how stupid can you be to let yourself get to this point? I mean, I should be with my family, with my husband, with his family. It should be a joyous occasion for everyone, and here I am in prison giving birth. I definitely think the twins are getting a raw deal.
80% of the women at MCIW are mothers, and when they get locked up, their children are usually sent to live with other relatives or in foster care. In this case, Jill's husband will take care of the babies. He will pick them up from the hospital later today.
I don't know if you can really get ready for something like that, but I guess, I don't have a choice. I like the clock. Sorry. It's hard things to go through. I didn't realize it was going to be this hard.
In a few hours, Jill will be forced to give up her twins and return to an 8x5 cell. She has 7 more years to go. Friday afternoon at Maryland Correctional Institution for Women. Inmate Christy Seal can't manage to stay out of trouble. This time it wasn't her girlfriend. It was a run-in with the prison therapist. At their weekly meeting, Christy accused the therapist of letting her down and lying to her at the top of her voice.
I'm not going to just accept them talk to me any kind of way. And I already have an anger issue. She already knows that. And then she just aggravated me to the point where I blew up in her office. They know that I don't put up with they bull.
Christy knows she may have hurt her chances of getting out early and reuniting with her mother and family.
I've been doing so good, and I don't want to lose my winning streak of doing the right thing and making me feel like I'm a loser again. I'm trying to better myself. It's just time for me to do something different with myself.
So you coming to the sessions tonight?
Lisa never cared, and now I care because I have a family to go home to. I got a family that's waiting for me. That's something I ain't never had. I can't mess up for them. I'm trying to go home to be with them.
Captain Hanna sees inmates like Christy all the time who need real guidance to turn their lives around.
Sometimes it takes a couple of times just to get it right. It takes a couple of times just to realize this is not a joke. I need to get my life in order. You do what you can to help them out.
Inmate and new mother Jill Newland is back in her cell. Her newborn twins are gone, taken home by her husband.
The baby is just talks to me on the phone all day, you know, and then I want to talk to the babies 100 times a day, and they can't talk back. I miss the twins a lot, but right now it's like split emotions because I really want to be with my kids, but at the same time, I keep saying, what good am I to my kids like that, you know, and you're not. You can't take care of children and be high.
Jill is ready to return to the prison's intensive drug treatment program. She's fiercely determined to stay clean for good.
I actually do feel like it's a fresh start. I think if I just stay positive and just keep trying to do the things I need to do to stay focused, I'll be okay. I want to be clean. I want to do the right things.
To help keep inmates like Jill focused, the prison offers a unique program for new mothers. Once a week, they can get a special visit where they openly hold and play with their babies. For 2 hours, they can be parents. If Jill stays on track, she'll see the twins, and the visits will remind her of why she needs to change. But while Jill Newland will eventually go home, convicted murderer Paris Pratt will not leave here, ever. These days, Paris has been staying out of trouble and out of luck, but she's only served 1 year of her life sentence.
I don't know if I'm going to adjust to life here. One day I could say I'm going to adjust to life. The next day I could say I might take my own life because this is not living. This is just existing. I just don't think I can do it in here. I really don't.
To keep herself sane, Paris will continue to look to fellow lifer Etta Myers.
It's a pretty frightening experience. I think that she'll come along, but I think that it's going to take some bumps and bruises along the way. It's going to take some time for her to accept the reality that she may be here for a very long time.
I was going through it. I probably will get there if I have to be here for years and years and years and years. You know what I mean? You have no other choice because you have to deal with it, but I'm just not there yet.
Only time will tell if Paris can adjust.
Everybody has an issue. When they come in here, there's a reason why they did what they did. And what we try to do is to help them, to process it, to look at ways that they can change within.
Officers like Captain Hanna try to help the inmates find their way.
I don't think that we should ever give up on people. I feel that my mission and my purpose is to help hurting women. Even just through caring, just being a kind of a decent kind of human being.
Day after day, Maryland's female felons continue to fill the cells at MCIW. Whatever their crimes, the prison and the officers give these troubled women the chance to change their ways. But in the end, it's a choice each inmate must make for herself.